Meaning that Mizuchi is back home. I nodded at the logic. And if we go in there, she might come after us.
It's a risk I wouldn't want to take, Alora explained. Not unless there is no alternative. And I believe we can find several superior alternatives.
Garrus gave me an apologetic look.
You should probably just leave the country for a while.
I blinked. Seriously? Alora turned to nod in agreement to Garrus.
Even if Mizuchi leaves the spire again, I doubt she'll leave Velia proper. I've never seen a spire monster go that far outside of their territory. Corrin would likely be safer away from here.
I shook my head. Fleeing might save our lives, but it's not going to actually solve anything. Other people are going to keep dying until we figure out what's going on here. Sarah turned toward me.
And you think we're the best equipped to handle that? Aside from Mara, we got demolished when we tried to fight Mizuchi. And from what I hear, your fight with Saffron didn't go much better.
I made a non-committal grunt in response.
It's not always about fighting, Karis offered, surprising me. But even if what you're pursing is a diplomatic solution, you'd probably be better off waiting. Leave for a few months. Let the monsters lose your tail. In about 2 weeks, I should be able to get us some help.
He gave me a meaningful look. Meaning that he can leave the country and get equipment? Oh, no, he's talking about the Jaden box.
When I'd first picked up the box, the documentation had said that it would take about 200 days to recharge. It had been a lot less than that. When I'd used it to try to summon Karis, I'd hoped that it might use less mana when trying to summon someone close by. That was still possible and would require further testing, but it didn't work in that case. I considered his offer.
In terms of help, could you get us someone else as powerful as you are?
He nodded. Potentially. Maybe more than one person, if we're lucky enough that some of my friends are in the same place.
That was a tempting offer, but assuming the 200-day limit was accurate, and I couldn't assume it was wrong, we were still more than 100 days away. If this mystery organization was acting now, they could do a lot of damage in that time period.
Cecily turned to me.
You should go to your mother.
Mother?
Something clicked in my mind. Tristan had been trying to get me to go to Delanos too. That was where Mother presumably was. Did that mean she was involved in all this?
I wasn't sure I could handle another family member being involved in this madness. Or was he just trying to get us both to be in a safe location?
I like Lady Lyran and all, Patrick offered, but I'm not sure how that has anything to do with this.
Lady Lyran is on the city council. She may be a target, like I was,
Alora offered.
It would be kind of us to inform her that there may be a threat.
That was an explanation, but not the only one. But I wasn't convinced that Alora was one of Mizuchi's targets in the first place. Alora had left almost immediately after hitting Mizuchi with that powerful attack. Maybe that was because of how exhausted she was. She still hadn't fully recovered from fighting Saffron. But maybe she just wanted to make a show of contributing before she left.
Mizuchi hadn't had a chance to attack Alora, so there was no way for me to know if she would have, if she'd had the chance.
I couldn't trust Alora on this. Not when she'd presumably been one of the people who had started this in the first place. Going to my mother was a potential route for getting answers, although it was somewhat less likely now that I'd seen that Alora had some kind of brand. If my mother worked for the same organization, maybe she would have one as well. In retrospect, I didn't have any good information on the brand at all. I just had the word of Alora and her sibling. I trusted Sheridan a little more. They'd helped both me and Sarah, after all, but their loyalty was probably to their sister.
Lady Lyran, Karis frowned, turning to me. I think your mother tried to have me arrested last time we met.
Yes, that was her with me,
Alora confirmed, making things more awkward for me. I'd been trying not to let Karis in on that little fact.
That added another complication I'd have to deal with. Sorry about that. I'm sure I can clear that up.
I turned to Alora, deliberately changing the subject. You were just in Delanos. Were you with my mother?
Alora shook her head.
No, but we were on related business. I have a feeling I could locate her as long as she isn't in the spire at the moment.
Karis raised a hand in a gesture for me to pause.
I didn't realize it was Delanos you were talking about heading to in order to meet your mother. I'm not one to hold a grudge, but I didn't exactly have a good experience last time I was in Delanos. I can't go with you if you're heading there.
Katashi didn't clear your name? I asked.
Oh, that was taken care of. But I may have made some personal enemies, and I'd rather avoid any conflicts with them. Believe me, that wouldn't be good for anyone involved.
Karis reached up and adjusted his mask, which just made it look more lopsided. I couldn't laugh at how silly that looked, though. He just added a whole other complication. I put my head in my hands, thinking. People chatted around me for a moment, but I focused on my own thoughts. What did I want to do? Visiting my mother might get me a few answers, but I didn't know if I could even find her. And if Karis wouldn't come with me, I'd be losing one of my strongest allies. While I had Karis with me, I had a real chance to climb high in the spire. I also currently had access to Alora, who could get us inside, and a full team worth of people that I trusted. I didn't know if I'd ever get that kind of opportunity again. Moreover, Tristan's last letter had made it sound like something had gone wrong. If he was in danger, that made it an even higher priority for me to meet him as quickly as possible. I would never forgive myself if I had a chance to see Tristan and I missed it because I'd chosen the safer path. Okay, I said, addressing the room. Alora is right that we should send Mother a message. But if we want any real answers, any real solutions, we're not going to find them outside the spire.
Well, Alora said, I'm not going back in there. Not while I'm very likely to be toward the top of Mizuchi's list of delicious morsels.
I took a breath. Can you teleport me inside without you? Alora frowned.
Theoretically possible, but I don't like it.
Because you wouldn't get anything out of it? Karis asked.
Alora rolled her eyes.
Well, there's that, obviously. But also because it has a high chance to get Corrin killed, and Tristan would hold me responsible for that.
I'll take responsibility, I said. I can send him a message explaining that. Alora laughed.
You don't know your brother very well.
That hurt. Sarah intervened on my behalf.
Of course not. He hasn't seen his brother in 5 years, and now he believes Tristan may be involved in a mass killing. One that you played a role in initiating.
Alora didn't get angry, as I'd expected. She just waved a hand.
True, true. Fine. I can send you into the spire, but not without a full team that has a method of locating Tristan. We're doing this right, or we're not doing it at all.
I nodded at that. I can work with that.
That's a mistake, Corrin.
Cecily shuffled her chair closer to mine.
You really should go see your mother. I'm sure she could explain all this, and with a vastly lower risk.
I'm very tired of running away from danger, Cecily.
That doesn't mean you should run toward it.
She had a point. I didn't like risks either. Normally, I avoided them as much as possible. I planned for every contingency I could think of, even ones that weren't likely. But in this case, I had resources at my disposal that I was likely to lose, and Karis's mention about Delanos had made it clear that it was possible for me to lose those resources at any time. Everything had started with Tristan, with his attack on Tenjin in the Spire. And now, all evidence was pointing toward that situation coming to a resolution, one that I suspected wouldn't end well for my brother, unless I took the steps to help him. The spire had been sealed shut again. Someone didn't want anyone finding something that was inside. It was most likely that Katashi had sealed it again himself to prevent any interference in the investigation. He'd mentioned that he'd been planning to do so. But even if that was the case, the fact that the spire hadn't been unsealed after another couple months meant something had to have gone wrong. I needed to learn what was happening inside the spire. Tristan was my highest priority, but I also needed to learn what was going on with Tenjin still being missing and Mizuchi being on the loose. I wasn't going to get that much information anywhere else.
For what it's worth,
Sheridan lifted their glass and swished it around, looking thoughtful.
I agree with Corin.
Of course you do,
Alora sighed.
You always have to disagree with me.
While you're quite right, sister, I have other reasons.
Sheridan took a sip from their glass, then set it down.
For one, I don't believe finding Corin's mother in Delanos is likely to work. She's most likely climbing the spire, and if she is, she'd be just as hard to find as Tristan, if not harder.
And if she's outside? Alora asked.
If Lady Lyran is outside the spire, we can simply contact her via a wayfarer. I'll send a message immediately telling her what happened and to be careful. She'll know what to do.
Thanks, I nodded to Sheridan. I'd appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Now beyond that, I believe we've been overlooking the real issue. Whoever is organizing all this madness is almost certainly within the spire. Even if that isn't Tristan, we should be looking for them if we wish to stop this.
Alora waved a hand in a conciliatory gesture.
You do have a point.
I still don't think he should go.
Cecily's voice was quiet, almost a whisper. I dismissed that line of thought for the moment. Sorry, Cecily. I'll be careful. But there are good reasons I need to do this. For one, while Mizuchi may be in there, there's a good chance that someone equally dangerous is hunting me out here.
Ah, yes. She hadn't heard about Saffron.
Alora raised a hand to right below her lips.
I suppose I can see your logic. He did seem the vindictive sort.
Cecily frowned.
Who could possibly be as dangerous as Mizuchi?
He's a child of the tyrant in gold, I explained.
Oh.
She blinked, then adjusted her glasses.
Wait, really?
I gave her a gesture of acknowledgement.
Wow. You have had a terrible few weeks.
That does raise an important question, though.
Patrick's hand went to his chest, though I couldn't tell if he was doing it consciously or not.
What happens if we do run into Mizuchi in the spire?
I think she might be weak against lightning, I offered. When you reflected that lightning attack, it seemed to hurt her more than anything else. And she's supposed to be a water serpent, so that would make sense.
I thought that too. I hit her with lightning again right after that.
Patrick shook his head.
It bounced right off.
I remembered that. Strange. Even though Patrick's spell was obviously much weaker than Mizuchi's breath, it probably should have done something if it was her elemental weakness.
How does a water serpent cast lightning spells anyway?
Patrick asked.
I mean, shouldn't that be, like, impossible?
I wouldn't be surprised if she has all forms of elemental magic. God beasts break a lot of the rules of what you'd expect from normal monsters. Their children often have unusual capabilities as well,
Alora offered.
It would be better if you abandoned any ideas of beating Mizuchi in a straight fight. She wasn't even using her true form.
That was a valid answer, but a bit dismissive. Even if children of the god beasts had unusual abilities, I assumed they had to have some kind of logic behind them. If she could use types of magic that other creatures of her element couldn't, there had to be a source for that. Even if we can't beat her, that doesn't mean we shouldn't discuss tactics. I shook my head. We don't have to win in a straight fight, but I'd be more confident facing her if we had a plan.
Alora gestured for me to slow down.
You're better off retreating if you see her. That banishment spell, if it really was a banishment, might keep her confined to a specific area. It probably will also make her weaker for a while. Banishment is powerful magic.
Banishment was from a restricted attunement, if I remembered right. That meant Vellum had a second attunement she hadn't told me about. That wasn't exactly surprising, given her personality.
I hope she's... If she died, it would be my fault, wouldn't it?
I tried not to think about that, refocusing on the conversation. Alora's comment had given me another idea. We'll plan to retreat if we see her, or, alternatively, I might have a way to get her to talk to us.
Alora raised an eyebrow at that.
Care to share?
Time to use a small secret to hide the larger one. I slipped off the glove on my right hand. I have a restricted attunement. Arbiter. Almost all of them already knew about it. It was a minimal risk. Alora and Cecily were the only exceptions. Cecily leaned down, tilting her head to look closely at it.
Wow, what is that? I've never seen an attunement like this. Is it like that weird thing on her neck?
Funny story, it started out that way, but no. Katashi gave it to me. And as it happens, it gives me a degree of authority over certain types of monsters. If I can find a monster inside the spire that knows more about what is going on, I might be able to use this to convince them to help. I was stretching a little there, but only a tad. Researcher had indicated that she was obligated to help an arbiter. There were probably others like her.
Huh,
Cecily poked a finger at it.
What's it do?
That's a little outside of this discussion, dear, Allura offered. But for what it's worth, I think talking to monsters might be a good idea. Talking to Mizuchi, however, is a terrible idea. She's simply too dangerous.
Sorry. It's just so interesting.
Cecily leaned back in her chair.
Can I ask you about it later?
I nodded to her. Sure. She looked positively gleeful at the idea.
Okay, so, Spire, Patrick tapped on the table. I'm going. Who's going?
I frowned. You're still pretty badly hurt, Pat.
Nope. You don't get to say that.
I noticed that Patrick's hand went instinctively to his chest, where his injury was, in spite of his objection.
I didn't go with you last time, and you nearly died. You didn't tell me when you were being abducted.
He shot an angry look at Allura.
And you nearly died again. There is no way you're leaving me behind this time. None.
I took a breath. Okay. Patrick is going. Patrick nodded, setting his jaw but looking slightly mollified at my agreement. I turned toward Karis. I didn't ask before, but honestly, I don't think there's any chance we can make this work without you. Karis waved a hand sleepily.
Of course I'm going.
Well, if he's going, and Patrick's going,
Marissa grinned.
I suppose I'm going too.
Sheridan shot Marissa a stern look. Patrick is on the mend, but he only has one injury. You are in no condition to be going into a spire. Marissa leaned forward, lifting the one fist that wasn't currently covered in bandages.
Look, I've still got one good punch in hand. More than good enough.
Marissa, you're the strongest physical fighter here, aside from Karis, I said. But I agree with Sheridan on this. You need to recover first. Marissa wrinkled her nose at me.
What about your regeneration ring? Can't you slap that thing on me for a few days?
I don't think we're going to wait that long before we go in, I explained. At least, I'd rather get in there right away.
Moreover, a ring is not going to repair the kind of severe bone damage you suffered, Sheridan explained. Not quickly, anyway. I can work on healing you a bit faster, but it will not be immediate, and it would be much less comfortable if I speed it up.
Karis turned to me.
You should give Marissa the few days she needs. You could all use a few days of rest after what you just experienced.
Truthfully, I wanted to go right then. Every day I waited was more of a chance for something else to happen, for something to get worse. But I looked around, and I saw precisely zero faces supporting my stance on that subject. If I was going to get my way about going to the spire, I had to know how to concede a few points here and there. Okay, fine. If we give it a few days, maybe Derek would be willing to come along as well. Cecily leaned over and whispered to me.
Who's Derek?
Derek Hardigan, emerald-level soulblade, I whispered back.
Oh, fancy.
I rolled my eyes.
You still need a diviner,
Sarah noted. I nodded while simultaneously noting that Sarah had not volunteered to join us in the spire. Given how things had gone last time, I didn't blame her. I could ask her privately about it later. I have an idea on that, I told her.
Someone you can trust? Allura asked. That could survive in the spire?
I considered that. Better than any of us, in a way.
What do you mean?
I smiled. It'll be a surprise. I'll introduce you later if she agrees. I was feeling pretty good about my plans when I heard a knock at the chamber door. Allura went and opened it. One of her household staff was standing there, and he leaned over and whispered something to Allura. She frowned, turned toward us, and said,
Magnus Cadence is at the front door asking to see his son.
Sarah and I exchanged looks. Patrick stood up first.
Gorn, you want me to go talk to him while you take care of this?
More than anything in the world.
I took a breath. Thank you, Patrick, but I should talk to him.
No, no, no.
I stood up. Patrick took a few steps closer.
Do you want me to go with you, at least?
I looked at him quizzically. I hadn't said anything, had I? How much did he know? But I just shook my head. Yeah, I think I'd like that. Thanks.
Sarah turned toward me.
I should probably go with you, too.
I glanced at her. If he said he wanted to talk to me specifically, he probably doesn't know you're here. You're probably better off keeping it that way. He's not going to be happy about any of this.
Fair.
She frowned.
But I'll be here if you need me.
Thanks. I meant it when I said that. But I was also relieved that she wasn't coming along. This was not going to be pleasant. Sarah hung back reluctantly as Patrick and I headed to the door. Magnus Cadence sat on a couch in the guest area in the entrance, sipping tea. He looked so normal, composed. If I didn't know him, I wouldn't have been frightened in the slightest. As it was, I jolted and paused in my step as soon as he set his teacup down and stood up. He stood, waiting for us to come closer, appraising. When we were within arm's reach, he nodded.
You seem mostly intact.
Hello, Father. I'm sorry we didn't... I began.
Quiet, son.
He raised a hand to silence me.
I haven't given you permission to speak.
This was not going to be good.
Now imagine you're in my position. You receive a message late last night that the Winter Ball, attended by very nearly every student of Lorien Heights, has been assaulted by one of the most powerful monsters in existence.
He clasped his hands together.
You listen, agonizing as you learn that the main ballroom, where the first-year students were sitting, was the center of the devastation. You recall, of course, that your two living children are both first-year students. And so, of course, you want to rush to the scene. But it's late at night in winter, and there are no trains running. You hire a carriage. You arrive to find many wounded still being treated, and others rushed to the hospital.
He winced, turning his head to the side.
You ask, but no one can tell you where your children are.
His hands tighten.
You had hoped at first that they were simply not in attendance, but they're on the guest list. And one of the guards even remembered someone of Sarah's description entering the party with a summoned monster. Apparently, she made quite a stir, but now she's missing. They both are. You go to the hospital next.
His hands were fists now.
And then you go to the morgue.
He takes a breath.
After looking through the bodies that were too badly burned to be identified, you believe your children are not there. You return to the hospital, and are fortunate enough to find an old colleague. Lord Teft informed me that he last saw you fighting with Mizuchi, a decision so irrational that I cannot even begin to comprehend how you came to that state. But regardless, he believed you had survived. He had heard that you were helping Sheridan Theus with the injured.
Father's eyes narrowed.
You haven't told me anything about having a healing attunement, so I assumed that was in error. Surely, you wouldn't fail to tell me about something as significant as a second attunement. But Teft was correct about one thing, at least. Here you are, House Theus.
He glanced from side to side. Father, Patrick, and I were the only ones in the room. Father nodded to himself, then punched me straight in the jaw. I stumbled backward and fell. My lip was bleeding.
Corrin!
Patrick stepped back, eyes widening. Then he rushed to kneel down and check on me. At first I was simply startled. He's never hit me in public before. But that was followed by a moment of relief. Which means that someone finally saw him hit me. My father took a step closer, wiping his fist on his coat. Insolent child. You are lucky I didn't use steel.
I thought I taught you better than this.
Patrick reached down and pulled me to my feet. I took a breath, then looked away. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I should have... He hit me again in the ribs this time.
I still haven't given you permission to speak.
I doubled over from the force of the blow. But as much as it hurt,
It hurt a hell of a lot less than it had when I hadn't had two shrouds and a pair of shield sigils. I straightened, holding my chest and coughing.
Sir, with respect, that's enough,
Patrick stepped between us.
I'm sure the Corn didn't mean any harm. He was taking care of the rest of us all night.
Father raised his fist, but not toward me this time. I caught his hand. Magnus Cadence turned his gaze to me, then he raised his other fist.
Do not test me, son.
I narrowed my eyes, my pulse quickening. Were you about to hit Patrick? He tensed his jaw.
I will discipline my children as I see fit, and I will not allow some peasant to question haste.
I was still getting used to using the haste spell in a fight. I wasn't very good at maintaining my accuracy with it, but when all I wanted to do was hit someone very hard, very fast, it was great for that. I punched Magnus Cadence. I punched him a lot. In a few seconds, he fell back, holding his stomach.
You will regret.
Don't give him a chance to move. No chance to cast. No quarter. Jump! The ring of jumping activated. I slammed my fist into his jaw. He didn't budge in the slightest. In the moment I'd taken to close the distance, his defensive instincts must have kicked in. His body was wrapped in a translucent field of energy now, visible to the naked eye. Not a mere shroud, a projection of armor created with a shaper attunement. And unlike a shroud, an armor spell was perfectly capable of stopping a punch entirely. I took a step back, gripping my knuckles. I'd bruised them on the impact. Magnus simply stared at me for a moment, then reached into the pocket of his coat and withdrew a handkerchief. He wiped the blood away from his lips from when I'd hit him the first time, then raised a hand to his chin.
You've chosen an odd time to grow a backbone, son.
You've threatened my friend. I felt my whole body tense as I braced myself for another strike. Magnus shook his head.
No, son. I was going to discipline your retainer, as is my right. If you wish for this, he waved at Patrick, to be your retainer, he will need to bear the burdens of all that entails. And you, he turned his eyes back to me, will need to remember one of the first lessons I taught you.
Magnus took a breath, staring me down.
Never start a fight you can't possibly finish.
He didn't move to attack. That was bad. I would have been ready for a swing or a blast of mana. He sounded calm, collected. That was more terrifying than if he'd flown into a rage. If I'd simply made him angry, he'd probably stop at just hitting me. But if he was thinking critically, he could do something more harmful. I took a step to block his view of Patrick, who still looked too startled to know how to handle the situation. I began to charge transference mana in my right hand. Transference countered enhancement, which was what Magnus used for his armor spell. If I hit him hard enough, I'd spent too much time thinking. Something hit my back, knocking me toward Magnus. Then Magnus slammed another fist into me, reinforced with enhancement mana. I hit the floor hard. When I was pushing myself to my feet, I noticed my father had drawn a cane from his belt.
You'll stay down if you know what's best for you.
I let the mana in my right hand dissipate. I couldn't punch him from this distance. I pushed myself into a sitting position. Magnus pointed toward Patrick with his cane.
Step forward, Patrick.
Patrick trembled for just a moment, then nodded, more to himself than Magnus. His voice was weak, but he managed a plea.
Please, just don't hurt Corn anymore, sir.
What are you to my son?
Patrick answered immediately.
I'm his retainer, sir.
Good. At least you were listening. I trust you're aware of what being a retainer entails.
I started to stand up. Father, this isn't quiet, Magnus hissed.
I protect him, sir.
He looked at the cane, then raised his eyes to meet my father's directly. Magnus turned his head to me.
I don't relish doing this, son. But you need to learn proper respect, and to remember your place. And it would seem that disciplining you directly is no longer sufficient.
Magnus raised his cane. That will be quite enough, father. Sarah's voice was still rough from the damage to her throat, but easy enough to understand.
I hadn't noticed when she'd stepped into the room. From the way his head swung and his expression, I don't think Magnus had noticed her either.
Sarah, Father lowered his cane, this matter does not concern you.
Sarah stepped closer, glancing down to me, then back to Magnus.
I respectfully disagree, Father. I'm certain my dear brother meant no offense, and we are guests here. Perhaps it would be best not to make a poor impression on our hosts?
Magnus waved a hand dismissively.
Please, Sarah. If I told Edrigan Theus that I needed to discipline my child and his retainer, he'd gladly hand me his own cane.
Perhaps outside, but not on the carpet.
There weren't actually any bloodstains on the carpet that I can see, but Sarah had managed something important. She'd gotten him to look. And after that moment of doubt, Magnus slipped his cane back onto his belt.
Perhaps you have a point. It has been some time since I've visited, and I would not wish to make a poor impression.
He glanced down toward me, his eyes full of disdain.
I trust you've learned your lesson?
I nodded slowly. Of course, Father.
Good.
He glanced to Sarah, then back to me.
I will be going to speak to Edrigan. I trust that by the time I'm finished, you two will be ready to return home.
Sarah cut in before I could.
We will, of course, return as soon as possible. But both Corrin and I have injuries from Mizuchi's attack that require further treatment. And I'm certain you know that Sheridan Theus is one of the most skilled healers available. We would be unwise to turn aside their hospitality.
Magnus waved a hand.
Very well. You may remain as long as you need further treatment, but I expect no further delays.
Of course, Father.
Sarah smiled sweetly. Magnus turned to Patrick, looking him up and down.
You may continue to serve, my son.
With that, he walked out of the room, heading to another wing of the house. I breathed a sigh of relief, letting just a bit of the tension out of my shoulders. Sarah and Patrick scrambled to help me to my feet.
Thanks, I managed. Come on, Sarah said. Let's get you cleaned up.
Sarah and I found a private room to talk after that. Patrick was graceful enough to give us a few minutes to ourselves.
Corrin, that was
routine, I replied. She drew in a sharp breath.
I saw scars. Every once in a while when you rolled up your sleeves or your shirt got pulled down a little.
I looked away. Stop. I don't want to talk about it.
How long, Corrin?
I tightened my fists. A long time. It got worse when Mother left. Much worse.
Why would anyone do that to their child?
I shook my head. He called it training. Sometimes it was a part of training. Or at least that's what he used to disguise it. I shook my head. Other times, he was just so angry. So angry that Mother left, that Tristan was gone. She put a hand on my arm. I pulled away.
I'm so sorry, Corrin. I didn't know.
I nodded.
I know.
I took a breath. I wish you never had to find out. Sarah looked away.
When he first told me that he was my father,
she raised a hand to wipe her eyes.
I was so happy.
The tears came more clearly after that.
I was happy.
We took a little while longer to go back to the room where I had been staying and find me a change of clothes. Sarah got some water to help me wash the blood off my face. It was nothing new to me. Routine, as I'd said. Except that I'd fought back this time. That was dangerous, but I had no regrets. I spent a little while longer just sitting with Sarah, trying to talk about other things to get my mind off of what had happened. It didn't work. I went and found Patrick. Thank you. He blinked at me.
For what?
For being there. For trying to step in. I shook my head.
I should have done more.
He looked away. No, you were perfect. I sighed. If you would have fought him, he would have killed you.
You really think so?
I nodded. He's a professional duelist. I managed to surprise him, but I never really had a chance. He could have killed us both if he had wanted to.
In the middle of Alora's house?
I shrugged. It would have been messy, but he probably could have gotten away with it. Don't know. I shook my head. Either way, it's better that you didn't fight him. Still, thanks.
I'm your retainer, Corrin. If I can't do something like that, what good am I?
I laughed. You're absurd, Patrick. You're a great friend to me, even without throwing yourself in harm's way. But the fact that you did, well, it matters. I took a breath. I'm not good at this kind of talk. Can we go do something else?
Sure. I think Cecily has been trying to find a chance to talk to you in private.
Well, that was awkward in a different way, but at least it was the kind of awfulness that just had to do with political secrets and maneuvering. Nothing I wasn't used to at this point. Okay. I'll go talk to her. I found Cecily still in the dining area, then asked her to come with me to talk to me privately. We went back to the bedroom I'd been assigned. Sarah had left by then, rejoining the others.
You really going to go to the Spire? That's your plan?
I nodded. You know more than you've told me.
Obviously. You know more than you've been saying, too.
That was true. Let me fill you in on a few things. I spent a solid hour catching her up. Her eyes widened when I explained what had happened with Professor Orden, and again when I told her about my fight with Jin. She was an engaged audience. Better that than her being engaged to me, at least. Your turn. She blinked.
Wow. You really fought Professor Orden? And a child of the tyrant?
Yeah. Neither experience was fun. I need to know, though. What's your place in all this? She reached into a bag at her side and retrieved a book. I didn't even need to see the words to recognize it. The colors and dimensions were identical. You're kidding.
I found it during my judgment. The voice of the tower started guiding me, giving me some directions,
she explained.
Then he told me he was Tristan Cadence, and that he was trapped inside the spire. I told Unica. She already knew.
There were multiple important bits of information there, especially the word trapped. I had to know more about that. Did he explain what he meant when he said he was trapped? She shook her head.
He implied there were things he couldn't say. Maybe he has a mark like the one that Allura does?
That wouldn't be surprising. If Allura's mark was real, then maybe all the members of their faction had one. If so, it would mean that even finding Tristan might not get me the answers I wanted. But if it didn't, getting inside the spire still gave me several other options, especially with the team I was planning to bring with me. Okay, how did Unica know about it?
She's been climbing for the last couple years. Apparently at one point she was separated from her group, and Tristan appeared. He saved her from a monster, like a hero.
That was very interesting. It was the first thing I'd heard that implied that Tristan could physically appear in person in the sections of the tower that climbers explored. I'd been assuming he was probably in the lower levels of the tower somewhere, in that administrative section that researcher had alluded to. It was possible that was still the case, though, and he was simply able to move, or project illusions that looked like him, rather than just illusions that looked like a hovering cloak. And he, what, recruited her? Cecily shook her head.
No. He just warned her to stay away from the spire for a while, and to get her family out of the city before the end of the year. This was just a couple months ago. We've been preparing to leave, but Mom and Dad have been stubborn. They won't believe Unica, and she wouldn't leave without them.
That made sense, but it also raised the question of why Tristan didn't recruit Unica to whatever organization he was a part of. Was he trying to keep her out of harm's way? Or did she simply lack the skills he needed to be a useful tool? I wasn't sure I could believe what Cecily was telling me. She seemed genuine enough, but I'd been fooled before. I also couldn't guarantee that what Unica had told Cecily was true. Maybe Unica was working with Tristan and simply wouldn't tell her. But for the moment at least, Unica sounded like a dead end. I'd follow up with her directly for more information if I failed to find Tristan, but at the moment, Tristan and Allura were much more likely sources of information to pursue. Okay, I nodded. Do you want to come with us into the spire? Cecily gave me an awkward laugh.
I'm flattered, but I'm not really...
She shook her head.
I fought Mizuchi because I had to. But I don't like fighting, Corrin. I never have. And the spire? It's terrifying in there. I don't know how you can be so casual about going inside like this.
I prepare. I tap my head. Mentally, physically, emotionally, and it's still never enough. Not really. But if Tristan is in there, that's where I need to be.
And I can't convince you to wait a few months? Get those allies that your masked friends talked about?
I shook my head. Bringing Karis's friends in on this would just introduce more people that I couldn't necessarily trust. As much as I like Karis, I don't know his true motives, or even what he is. I can trust that his primary goal right now seems to be to get in Katashi's good graces, though, and that means he's going to keep protecting me. With others, I can't say the same. And I'm also just not willing to wait that long. Cecily sighed.
You're still so stubborn.
I nodded. I know. Some things never change. She looked me straight in the eyes and said,
Yeah, you're right. Some things never change.
I'm pretty dense when it comes to things like that, but I'm pretty sure there was some sort of romantic implication in there. So I did the natural thing. Said, Okay, good talk. Bye for now. And fled the room. Chapter 22. Unlikely Companions. It was only minutes after fleeing from Cecily that I remembered she'd been in my room, and that there was stuff I needed in there. Awkward. Either way, I had other preparations to do before going to the spire. Say, Karis, you don't happen to have, infinite money? Karis chuckled. No, Corrin. Most of my money and equipment isn't even in the country. I do have some money in an international bank, but it's not a lot. Why? If we're serious about climbing the spire, we're going to need equipment. I have more than last time, but we're not going to have someone with us who can teleport. I'd rather we have a few ways of immediately escaping the spire if things go badly. He made a contemplative expression. I can probably afford a couple little things. Let me hit the bank. I wasn't sure what little meant, but I also didn't want to impose further on Derek or Alora. I owed them enough as it was, and when you owed powerful people things, they eventually came to collect. I was glad they'd funded the communication necklaces, but asking for more money wasn't something I was comfortable with. Karis returned a few hours later. Okay, let's go shopping. I grinned. I know just the place. An hour or so later, I paid my first visit in several weeks to the Climber's Court. They always had the strangest customers. That day, the weirdest was a student who looked to be about my age, maybe even younger, that was being followed around by a half dozen golems of various materials. Instead of a traditional necklace, he wore what looked like a cube with runes etched all over it. I didn't recognize a single one of the runes. He mumbled something to himself, complaining about someone named Zack, and then left the building. On another day, I might have asked him about that cube, or the golems. His relationship with that Zack was less interesting. But I was busy, so I ignored him and headed inside.
Corrin, my favorite customer!
I rolled my eyes at Lars. Hey, Lars. I've brought a friend to
Lars? Lars Mandrake? Karis's voice was full of disbelief.
Lars took one look at Karis and made a belly-deep laugh.
Karis Illyrian! I never thought I'd see you in a civilized place like this!
Believe me, it's not by choice.
Karis stepped forward and gave Lars a hug. Huh. You two know each other? Lars turned to me.
We'd have gone on an adventure or two together, back in the day.
Karis nodded.
He used to serve as quartermaster for an expedition into the unclaimed lands. I traveled with them from time to time.
Well, well,
Lars took a step back, waving at the shop.
If you're here, I have to charge twice as much.
Karis laughed.
I would expect nothing less.
I spent a while catching up with Lars while Karis looked around the shop.
Business had been slow with the spire closed, but he still got some from students and other regular customers. I didn't tell him about much, just generalities, nothing particularly personal. There was a part of me that wanted to tell him, though. Maybe in a different place, at a different time. I almost considered inviting him to come with us to the spire. He was a former climber himself, after all. But I'd seen how he looked after Mizuchi's attack. Sad. Shaken. Not afraid. No, there was something else there. I'd noticed that Lars told a lot of stories about his old days in the spire, but not about why they'd ended. I didn't mention Mizuchi attacking the ball. I let him spend some time catching up with Karis, too, while I searched the shop. I listened in to a polite degree.
"Do you remember that time in the tomb with that undead sorcerer?" Lars asked. "You think I could forget that? We must have held that doorway for 2 hours. You kept pouring healing potions on me whenever I got injured. I never got the stains out of that shirt." Lars laughed.
"That sounds about right. Can't believe how many potions we wasted that day."
"We? I'm not the one who tried to drown a white in them."
"No, that's not fair. We all thought healing magic would hurt them."
I smiled. It was good to hear them sharing stories. It was a little surprising to hear that any of Lars's stories were actually true, but I decided to chalk that up to him being selective while a friend was around. I lingered a little longer than I needed to in the store, picking out what I wanted long before we actually left.
"Oh, and there was that time with the Hydra!"
I smiled. For the first time in days, something felt right. With Patrick, Marissa, Karis, and me, we had a group of four. I invited Derek, but he turned me down. He was staying at the hospital with his aunt, Professor Meltlake. She apparently didn't have anyone else. There were obviously other members of the Hardigan family. They were a prominent house. I didn't ask why no one else was there for her. If he wanted to explain, he would have. But I realized the fact that she didn't use the Hardigan name might have involved more than her just acquiring a fancy personal title. I visited her, but she hadn't woken up. She was not in good shape. I tried not to think too much about what I could have done to prevent that. I tried to visit Professor Vellum, too, but they wouldn't let me see her. That made me extremely worried, but there was nothing more I could do for the moment. I wanted to know what had happened to her, but perhaps even more than that, I could have used her advice, even if I knew she wouldn't approve of my plan. I resolved to figure out how to contact her later, but for now, I had more pressing concerns. Without Derek, I wanted someone else who was close to his level of power. That didn't leave a lot of candidates. Taft was still badly injured, even more so than his students. Sheridan was the logical choice. I asked them to come, and they agreed faster than I'd expected. With that, we had a healer, and I was pretty confident that Sheridan had a few other tricks up their sleeve, too. Number six had to be a diviner, or at least someone with a comparable skill set. I headed to the divinatory. "So I know you have information gathering magic. Does that work the same way for you inside the spire?" Researcher blinked.
"I am a researcher. My abilities are designed to function within the tower. The original that I am copied from resides and studies within."
I nodded. "That's what I thought. Do you have spells designed for locating people?"
"Yes. My abilities are similar to a human diviner's, but with a stronger emphasis on searching through large quantities of data. Location spells are within my abilities."
She gave me a quizzical look.
"This is an unusual line of questioning."
"I need to find someone who is inside the tower." I folded my hands in front of me. "Would you be able to help with that?"
"It is generally not permitted for me to provide information on anyone inside the spire to anyone other than one of the visages or other researchers. As you are an arbiter, however..."
Researcher frowned.
"I have not been prepared for this situation. It may be irrelevant, however, as I am not capable of reaching the spire."
She waved down at the apparatus that was providing her with the mana necessary to remain stable. "I'd thought of that, though. How much mana do you need to remain stable?
I consume a total of 100 mana per hour.
That was more than what I was hoping for, but I could work with it. Maybe. I took out my bracer of mana regeneration and offered it toward her. This device is designed to regenerate the wearer's mana. It has a mana capacity of 60 and regenerates 1 mana per minute. Can you determine if the mana inside is something you could use? She took the offered bracer, turning it over in her hands. For a moment, her pupil and sclera shifted to bright azure.
The mana inside is pure, and the transfer function would work on me.
Her eyes returned to normal, and she handed the bracer back to me.
Your measurements appear to be accurate as well. I would drain the initial mana charge in approximately 36 minutes, if not for the regeneration function. In that 36 minutes, it would have regained another 36 mana. That would take me 21 minutes to drain, during which it would regain...
I waved a hand to stop her. You'd be able to last just about an hour. Yeah. We could get you to the spire that fast without a problem, although we'd need to make sure to get approval from the guards in advance to avoid waiting in line or any paperwork.
But I would not necessarily have enough time to get back.
I pondered that. What would happen if you ran out of mana? Would you reappear here? She shook her head.
I would die.
I blinked. Die?
This version of me would cease to exist. While my summoner could summon another copy, it would not be... me.
She sounded scared. Had she developed enough of a sense of self to distinguish herself from other versions? In a way, it made sense. Veneve also had humanoid intelligence, and he had a similar epiphany, if not to the same degree. He just wanted to be re-summoned in the future. Apparently, that was enough to count as continuing to exist. Maybe Researcher was different because of the apparatus that maintained her, or maybe she'd just been in this state so long that the function of the summoning spell that inhibited her desire for self-preservation had failed. Either way, I'd have to respect her view. If she considered vanishing to equate to death, I needed to prevent that. Okay, let's not let that happen. I considered options. Can you use a return bell? She shrugged a shoulder.
I am not certain. It is most likely possible, however.
I wasn't going to accept uncertainty when someone's life was involved. Can you pull mana directly out of another object if it's not designed to transfer mana? She shook her head. I considered other options for a bit, but it was Researcher that suggested the solution that should have been obvious.
Did you enchant that bracer yourself, purifying it with the Arbiter attunement?
I nodded. Yep.
Can you make a second bracer?
I put a hand on my forehead in exasperation. Of course. Or I could just add copies of all the runes to the same bracer and double the capacity and regeneration. It shouldn't be anywhere near the mana capacity of the metal yet.
That would provide 120 mana per hour, which is sufficient to support me indefinitely, provided I do not expend mana on spells.
I hadn't considered that last part. How much mana would it cost for you to detect someone's location within the tower?
I have a number of spells with location functions, but they vary in cost and requirements. Most have a cost within 10 to 600 mana.
600? I couldn't possibly supply enough for that. Okay, but there's something basic you could do with 10?
10 mana would be sufficient to determine if someone is present within the tower.
That wasn't quite good enough. What about 60? With that, could you get a floor number or a direction?
A direction would be possible. Determining the exact floor number would be a more powerful spell, costing 360 mana.
Out of my current range, then. But a direction was probably good enough. We could use it more than once and just keep climbing. What would you need in order to cast a direction spell?
A unique identifier, such as a material component linked to the target, or sufficient knowledge to search using a mental connection?
I nodded. I think we can provide that. Researcher floated down to her pedestal for a moment, looking wistful.
I do not know if I should help you. You may be exceeding the authority of an arbiter by asking for this.
I had to choose my words carefully here. I didn't want to be dishonest. This is related to a matter of both personal significance to me and directly related to a task that Visage Katashi asked me to investigate previously.
If I am able to complete this task, I may be able to provide further information to Katashi that would assist him with a matter of significant importance. That was tailoring my answer, to be sure, but it wasn't a lie. And I did want to help Katashi find Tenjin. I just didn't want to get my brother killed in the process. Even if Tristan was involved in something I didn't approve of, he was still my brother. And more than anything, I needed to ask him what had happened and why he'd made the choices that he had. There was still so much I didn't understand. She seemed to search my face, and for a moment, her eyes changed again.
You are speaking the truth. For the most part, at least.
Oh, Resh. I didn't know she could do that. I grinned sheepishly. I didn't mean to be misleading.
Yes, you did.
She shook her head.
But it is sufficient justification, even if you are hiding something. You sincerely believe you could acquire information that would be relevant to a visage. That implies you are operating within your role as an arbiter, and therefore I can assist you, even in a matter that would normally be forbidden.
Researcher turned her head away.
In the future, I would prefer if you do not deceive me, however.
I clenched my hands for a moment, then nodded. Sorry. It's a delicate matter. I will try to be more direct in the future. She looked back.
I believe you.
Another question occurred to me. Would leaving here violate your summoner's instructions? Researcher smiled.
They have not given me explicit instructions to remain, since it would normally be impossible for me to leave without them.
Okay. And how powerful would you say you are in combat? Her eyes widened for a moment.
I would be useless in a fight. I do not even have a shroud. Do you anticipate violence occurring?
That was bad. We're going to be climbing the spire. There will be all sorts of rooms, some of which will involve traps or battle. She took a step back.
Oh, I've never gone up the spire before. I've seen much of it, of course, and I knew...
If you know a way for us to move up without fighting, I'd be glad to use it. She shook her head.
Shortcuts do exist, but I do not have access to them, and neither would you.
That was disappointing. Okay, we'll just need to protect you then.
We?
I nodded. For now, I'll go upgrade this bracer to make it strong enough to maintain you. We'll test it in this environment for a few hours, just to make sure it works. Then we'll leave in a couple days, and you can meet the team. I spent most of the rest of the evening upgrading the bracer, as promised. The rest of the night was dedicated to modifying the ring of Derek controlling. The anti-tampering runes were a tricky problem to solve. I couldn't move the mana out of the runes. I couldn't add new runes. Destroying the runes might have worked, but it also might have destroyed the ring. I was just about to use my etching rod to try to scratch out the runes when I came up with a slightly safer plan. I asked Karras to use his metal magic to reshape the ring to remove the tiny sections of metal containing the anti-tampering runes. Fortunately, it didn't explode. With that, the ring was safe to modify. I made some minor adjustments, and then I put it on and ran some tests. It worked exactly as expected. The next day, I gave the bracer to Researcher. We tested it. It worked as expected. After that, we had 2 days remaining before it was time to head into the spire. We all spent more of that time preparing. Karras had purchased 5 return bells from Lars at my request. They were expensive, but everyone having a separate means to evacuate would make things much safer. I didn't need a bell. I still had my circlet with the same function, but voice activation. If for some reason it didn't work, though, having the bells as backup would be great. We debated where to place the anchors for the return bells. Alora's house was too far away, as was the school. It had to be within about a mile of the spire. That left a random place, like I'd used last time, or something more familiar. We'd initially talked about using Derek's old manor, but I didn't like the risk of Saffron showing up there, even if it was very unlikely he would arrive right when we did. There was always the chance he had it under observation. Ultimately, we just left the anchor rods with Lars. Apparently it wasn't the first time someone had done that. His shop was near the spire for a reason. After that talk, I remembered what he'd said about healing potions earlier. They were expensive. Like, shockingly expensive. A single potion cost about half as much as a return bell. Apparently that was because they required so much mana to be saturated into a small area to be effective, and because they also required certain rare herbs to create a useful healing effect, as opposed to just pouring raw liquid life mana.